Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Profound grief at the loss of a loved one can be devastating. What would you say if I told you there is a wonderful therapy for assuaging grief that is available to everyone? Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and our guest today is Dr. Alan Botkin. He's a clinical psychologist, and he's pioneered a way of inducing communications with dead loved ones and improving even the most complex and devastating kinds of grief, as you're about to hear. Astonishing story. He details his work in his wonderful 2005 book called Induced After-Death Communication, A New Therapy for Healing Grief and Trauma. I love this book. We'll talk a lot more about it. But he's updated his book, actually, in 2014 with Induced After-Death Communication, almost the same title, A Miraculous Therapy for Grief and Loss. And both of his books have a wonderful foreword from the legendary Dr. Raymond Moody. Anything that has Dr. Moody's seal on it is definitely, that's the good housekeeping seal for sure in this area of work. So I'm thrilled to have him here. Welcome, Dr. Al. I'm so glad to have you.
Well, thank you so much, Roberta. I'm happy to be here.
There's so much in your book that's exciting. When I read this book, Induced After-Death Communication, I was deep still in doing research on the afterlife. And one of the things I loved most about this was how it blends together so beautifully the things that I already had learned about the way reality works, and it brings in other things too. Very exciting book, even if you're not grieving, just because of what it helps you understand about how reality works, where the dead are, what they're up to, and how loving the process is. But I don't want to sort of spoil this for the listeners. I'd like them to hear your story. So tell us how you discovered what it is that you do. You were doing EMDR, and this all happened, I think, the first time. So what is EMDR, and why does that help?
Okay. EMDR is now considered to be an evidence-based psychotherapy worldwide. It has a lot of strong scientific research behind it. And the way EMDR works is you have a patient or a client attend to a certain aspect of a traumatic experience. And at the same time, you get their eyes moving left to right usually by tracking the therapist's moving hand. And remarkably, every time you do this with someone, it seems to increase the brain's ability to rapidly process and integrate these traumatic experiences. Things just move really quickly when one uses EMDR. Now, when working with trauma, I should back up and say that the main difference between a regular memory and a traumatic memory is that when one remembers a traumatic event, they not only remember it, they also relive it emotionally, and they see it and feel it all over again.
Oh, interesting.
So somebody may have been traumatized 40 years in the past, but when they think about it today, it feels like it's happening all over again.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, the wonderful thing about EMDR is it takes the reliving component out of the memory. And when I began using it back in the early 1990s, patients would say things after a session like something like, gee, you know, doc, this is the first time when I think about what happened, I feel like it's finally over and it's in the past.
Wow. Okay. So what is everyone listening is saying, what does EMDR stand for? So can you tell us that?
Okay, everybody get a pen and paper now. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Okay, so that's literally what it does. We move our eyes, and it reprocesses a memory that was traumatic in such a way that it desensitizes us to the memory.
I should add, it's just not eye movements. It works with many different kinds of bilateral stimulation. In other words, when you work with children, you have them put their hands on the table, palms down, and you alternately touch the back of the hands. Or some EMDR therapists prefer to use headphones that have alternating clicks, left, right, left, right. So it's not just the eyes. It's any form of bilateral stimulation seems to put the brain into this much higher processing mode. And it's likely related to dream sleep. When we're asleep and dreaming, our brains are processing and integrating information more rapidly and efficiently than when we're awake. And it's been known for some time that that increased processing during dreaming causes our eyes to dart back and forth.
Yes, yes. How interesting. So let's just also clarify another thing. Bilateral stimulation refers to the fact that our brain is actually two hemispheres, which are connected only a little bit. And things happen in one side of the brain or are registered there or in the other. And what this does is somehow integrate those events.
Well, the integration is even more than that. It appears to integrate left-right brain, but probably even the most important integration is top-down or bottom-up.
But your brain goes sideways. When you say bottom-up, what are you referring to?
Well, when people remember a traumatic memory, structures deep in the emotional older part of our brain fire, and that's why. And those lower parts of the brain are responsible for the sensory and emotional components of the memory. In other words, the reliving component.
Uh-huh.
And prior to EMDR, that part of the brain fires in isolation. However, after EMDR, when one recalls that same traumatic memory, the frontal lobes of the brain fire up. Now the top part of the brain is integrated with the lower part of the brain, which allows people to then remember the event in an abstract and emotionally detached way, as opposed to reliving it.
Isn't that exciting? Oh my goodness, I never understood that about it. All right, so if someone was abused in childhood, if you had a horrible accident, or if there's something that is just you can't get past, you can go to a therapist and really be much improved, right? Just by having this kind of therapy, quite apart from any grief issues.
Absolutely. I am firmly convinced it's the treatment of choice for all trauma.
Wow. Okay. All right. So with that background, one day you were helping a war veteran, right? Tell us that story.
Well, prior to working with this veteran who I call Sam in the book, I and my colleagues were just so excited by the results we were getting from EMDR. However, there were parts of the standard EMDR protocol, the way it's taught, that I was somewhat uncomfortable with and thought it could be improved. So I did a lot of experimentation on the standard EMDR approach. And I found a few things that make it work much better. Specifically, I ended up making 6 changes to it. So, of course, many of the ideas I had didn't work, but I did hit on a few that made it work better and even more rapid. And those changes are rather technical, most of them at least.
Okay, but at least you were venturing into a little bit of an experimental field, and you were experimenting with Sam, trying to help him because he was traumatized by his war memories. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, I had already made a number of changes by the time I sat down with Sam, and what the issue was is when Sam was in Vietnam. And by the way, I worked in a VA hospital for about 20 years, and all of my early work was with combat veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, excuse me, I was working with Sam. When he was in Vietnam, he became very close to a 10-year-old orphaned Vietnamese girl named Lee. And she stayed at their base camp and helped out with chores and so on. And her parents had been killed in the war. But anyways, they developed a very close father-daughter kind of relationship. And Sam had even made plans and had called his wife back home And they both agreed that they would he would adopt Lee and bring her home with him.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, anyway, one day, Lee was shot and killed right in front of Sam.
Oh.
A sniper shot her in the back, and when he turned her over, he saw that the bullet that had entered her back had blown open her front torso, and she was dead.
Oh, my.
And Sam picked her up and held her and rocked her in his arms and cried and sobbed, and eventually his fellow Marines had to separate them, and then they went and buried Lee. But when Sam was telling me the story, he was just racked with so much sadness. Oh. And he was, when he told the story, he was reliving the moment he saw Lee shot and when he held her, and he was back there again. But anyway.
Well, no, so this was many years later, right? That you
yeah, oh, this was many, many years later, decades, couple decades, a few
oh,
decades.
My goodness. All right.
So anyway, I'm giving eye movements to Sam, and I take him through the process with the changes I had already made at that point. And we got Sam's sadness to come down dramatically, which occurred at the very end of the session. And at that point, he closed his eyes and a big smile came over his face.
Oh.
And he kind of even giggled a little bit. And I remember looking at him while he had his eyes closed and thinking that was kind of unusual.
Yes, I'd say.
It wasn't unusual for people to find great relief from these horrible memories, but, you know, to kind of smile and laugh.
The giggle was extra, yes. Yeah. Not expected.
So Sam opens his eyes, and he's absolutely convinced that Lee's spirit had come to him privately, and she was had aged somewhat. She looked like a young woman. And she had long, beautiful black hair in the most beautiful white gown he's ever seen and surrounded by a beautiful white light.
Wow.
And then Lee privately, Sam privately told her, "I love you, Lee." And she responded, "I love you too, Sam." She then thanked him for taking such good care of her back then. And then she reached out and gave Sam a hug. Well, Sam was telling me all this with his eyes open, and he said he could actually feel her arms around him.
Oh, wow.
And he was convinced that that was Lee's spirit, and she was doing fine where she was. And now I'm sitting there listening to this. When I was in graduate school, nobody told me about near-death. Well, we did talk about near-death experiences, I think, for one class.
Right.
But I didn't know what after-death communications were. I had never heard of that before. I thought Sam had hallucinated, and I was worried about it.
Oh, no.
So that afternoon when I went home, I told the PM shift to keep an eye on him. I was worried about him. Of course, when Sam left my office, he was almost like he was skipping out of my office.
Yeah.
And feeling a lot of joy in all this. And so I thought maybe he hallucinated and he sort of snapped. But when I came back the next morning, both the PM and the night shift had reported that Sam did great all night. He slept about 8 hours, which was very unusual for him. And he was extremely happy the next day.
Wow.
And that continued on and on. And it was a weekend soon after that he went home on pass to visit his wife and young daughter. And up until that point, he had avoided his daughter because every time he looked at his daughter, those traumatic images of Lee popped up.
Right.
So he lived in the basement and stayed away from the family.
Oh.
and was really detached from his daughter. But anyway, he goes home on weekend, and all of a sudden, he's all over his daughter and wants to talk and wants to go do things. And I think the daughter was a little concerned
that
her father had snapped too.
But what a miracle. Aren't you thrilled to just even remember this yourself?
It was absolutely wonderful once I realized that he was, in fact, healed to a great degree. Well, he was completely healed when it came to that particular memory. Yeah, it was absolutely thrilling.
Wow.
And then accidentally, while using my EMDR approach that I had already changed significantly. More of my patients began reporting these experiences.
This is exciting to an afterlife researcher for a quite independent reason. We're going to go ahead in a little bit and talk more about the addressing grief aspects and why that works. But just purely as someone who has spent my life researching the afterlife, I know that someone who died as a child is going to grow up to be a young woman. So even though decades have passed, probably it looks as if maybe 10 years had in her life, because she's now a young adult woman, beautiful, wearing a long white dress. All of these things we would expect independently based on our afterlife research. The white light surrounding her, we would expect that independently. The fact that she's fine, the fact that she hugs him, all of that's just affirmation of all the rest of the afterlife evidence. And that's independently exciting to me as a researcher.
Yeah. And of course, Sam was not aware of any of that research. And he didn't know what an ADC was either. So neither of us knew. And, you know, it was only sometime after that I found the Guggenheim's book, Hello from Heaven.
Yes. Yeah.
And I realized these experiences are naturally occurring experiences that are not at all rare.
Yes, no.
I think the Guggenheims reported that they occur in about 20% of the population, and more recent research suggests it's more like 30% of the population.
And so, I would submit it's more than half, but many people won't talk about it.
Yeah. And, you know, and some people, I think, have the experience and then just kind of push it away or don't pay attention to it and, you know, think they're, you know.
Right. Two things happen. One is, oh, I just imagined that, or, oh, that was a coincidence. And the other thing that happens that can get in the way of people's really enjoying this is that they just feel they can't talk about it because someone might ridicule them for it.
Absolutely.
So I think this is one of the most common human experiences there is. And it's beautiful that you can induce it when people who need it so desperately.
Yeah. It's been known for a long time that these experiences are very healing. The only problem was is we had no way of making these experiences happen. Although Raymond Moody...
Yeah,
I was not the first to do it. Raymond Moody, in his book Reunions,
yes,
you know, talked about his use of his psychomantium,
yes,
which is a method based on ancient Greeks, and he reported that about half of his subjects were having the experience.
Yes, yeah, he induces it in an entirely different way, but
absolutely,
the result is the same. It's a reunion. I should more thing with regard to what you've done, which is affirmed by other research, and that's that when he was really, really deeply in grief, he probably couldn't have had this kind of contact. What you did by first helping him to lessen the pain of his memory, and it was to open himself so that he was able to have this communication. So I can easily see why this works. This is beautiful.
That is an excellent point, and it's really at the very heart of what I now call induced after-death communication, or IADC therapy. The first, really, 90% of what we do in IADC therapy is we process the sadness.
Yes, yeah. I can see why you'd have to do it. Yep.
I am convinced that the sadness prevents the ADC from occurring.
Yes.
It gets in the way. I've worked with parents who lost a child, and they come and see me, and they say, our neighbor had an ADC, but we didn't. Is our daughter angry at us? That kind of thing.
Yes.
The answer is no, you're just too sad. So what we do in IADC is we process all that sadness and get people to a place where they generally report that they feel very peaceful and calm. But once they are in that peaceful and calm state, additional bilateral stimulation generally results in this ADC occurring.
This is also interesting. I should just pause for a moment and say you're listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which is about exactly what we're talking about today, afterlife communications of all kinds. You can learn more about all my books at robertagrimes.com. And our guest today is the wonderful Dr. Alan Botkin. Dr. Al is the pioneer in this amazing field of using what are really standard therapy techniques now to go just one step further and to heal in large part, you can't ever really get over the death of a loved one, but you certainly can learn to process the grief in such a way that it doesn't any longer harm your life. And that's what Dr. Al is doing. I really so much appreciate the work you're doing, and we all should, because this is an area of such unnecessary pain. It's nobody ever actually dies. We're only separated temporarily. And what you're doing is helping people really get that fact. There's no way to get it better than to actually have a visit with a person you thought didn't exist anymore. So this is very exciting.
Yeah, I'd like to add one thing, because I do want to mention it at some point in this interview.
Sure.
I professionally don't claim that these ADC experiences are authentic spiritual experiences. I don't claim that.
I understand. We must be professional. I understand that.
The one thing I do claim is that the people who go through this IADC therapy are healed to a degree that has been thought to not even be possible. And people leave feeling wonderful and feeling good. As a psychologist, I don't see it as my job to push my own personal beliefs on my clients or patients. I let them decide whether the experience was real or not. And you know what? It really doesn't even matter. I've had people have a wonderful ADC, induced ADC experience, and they say, well, that couldn't have really been my brother. I think my brain just played a trick on me. Those people heal to the same degree as those who believe it.
Right.
So what it is, I think the essential therapeutic ingredient, it is that the IADC provides an experiential reconnection, which resolves that deep, painful sense of disconnection from our loved ones.
I think this phenomenon of, and I understand perfectly why, as a professional, it doesn't even matter whether people believe it or not. As long as you can produce this wonderful result in people by your therapy, that's certainly more than sufficient. But I think this phenomenon is kind of interesting. There are people who just find the whole concept of life after death to be so staggeringly beyond what they ever were taught, there are people who find it to be a bridge too far. But my experience has been with people that I've educated that as they begin to themselves internalize a way of looking at their minds and at life and at their loved ones that includes eternity, the fact that our minds are eternal, it really does take away so much of the pain that we normally associate with living, both grief and fear. Fear is enormously reduced, fear of all kinds, when people really get the fact that, you know, you never die. What do you get to worry about? I think that's what it amounts to.
Well, I got to tell you a little story. When, you know, years ago, I read Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life, which, of course, is about near-death experiences.
Yes.
And I wasn't quite sure what to make out of that. Until I started asking people who had been close to death, and then I started getting all these wonderful stories, which was a point that Dr. Moody made in his book. People aren't going to tell you unless you ask them. And then it was a number of years later when Raymond Moody came out with his book Reunions. I thought Raymond went off the deep end.
I know.
If there was too much for me to believe, but you know, look at me now. I'm doing basically that's what I do. But yeah, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around that kind of possibility. It almost sounds too good to be true, which is one of the things IADC therapy suffers from. It sounds too good to be true.
Yeah, but it is true. And as I say, with those of us who study the science of afterlife research, understand that it's scientifically very logical that it would work. But I just want to give a little plug to our mutual friend, Raymond. Raymond Moody is unique in this field in that he has been on the cutting edge of three specifically areas of research. First, he pioneered near-death experiences. He coined the term in Life After Life in 1975. And not content with that, he became interested in the ability that there might be to induce communications with the dead, and he started experimenting with the ways the ancient Greeks had done it, using psychomantians. And that was when he wrote Reunions. I met him, actually, first met him at the time that that book was what just came out. And he was such an earnest researcher, very excited about what he had discovered. Well, not to be content with that either, recently he became interested in the kinds of experiences that surround death. And he wrote a book in 2010 which talked specifically about the fact that many people, surprisingly many, share in the death-related experiences of their loved ones. They'll be sitting beside the bed, and they also will see the deathbed visitors who have come. The book is called Glimpses of Eternity, and some of the stories in it are just, as I say, perfectly consistent with the science of the afterlife, but beautiful stories. And so he coined the term shared deathbed experiences. I think everybody who works anywhere near any of the fields where you and I work reveres this man, if only for his questing mind and his great contributions to the scholarship in this field.
Raymond Moody is without a doubt my number one hero.
Yes.
I think he's fantastic. Matter of fact, the very first public presentation I gave was in Las Vegas when he was there at the University of Nevada, and he invited me to go speak, and boy, was I nervous.
I'm sure.
That was my first public presentation of IADC, and there's Raymond Moody sitting there.
Oh, my. But he is such a sweet and unassuming man.
Oh, he really is. You know, it's interesting you mentioned the shared near-death experiences. We sort of stumbled into what I called shared ADC experiences.
Oh, tell us.
Well, it happened once. The first time it happened, I was working with a patient, and one of my interns, who had already performed the procedure himself, was sitting in on our session. And for some reason, my intern closed his eyes and started giving himself eye movement, moving his eyes left to right. And he actually eavesdropped in on my patient's ADC experience. They had the exact same experience. And it wasn't a typical ADC. It was kind of unusual, and it involved a backyard scene of an uncle and, you know, with the pond and ducks flying by and all this stuff.
Wow. And so he didn't know this person who had died? And
yet no.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Wow, that's more sort of information to put into the great picture, that's possible. Wow.
And of course, I trained my colleagues in how to do this, as well as interns, and they all had equal success, which was a big deal for IADC. That, you know, I didn't have any special powers. It was the procedure itself that was very robust and worked very well.
Yes.
And a couple of those people I trained, when they were doing it with their patients, they would close their eyes and give themselves eye movement and watch what their patient was experiencing.
What an amazing thing. This is an area which will explode in terms of interest once mainstream science gets past this obsession it has for still searching for a source of consciousness in the brain. Consciousness, it does not originate in the brain. The brain is a receiver and transmitter. It is merely a way for us to be in an avatar body here during a very brief lifetime. And you don't have to agree with us, Doctor. I understand that you must keep your professional distance, but I'm trying to sort of help people integrate what you're telling us with what we've been saying before. This is a very important kind of therapy, which really, I think, is going to take off once, and this is going to happen soon, once it's been proven that human minds are eternal. It's only going to be logical that this wonderful therapy that's being pioneered now is going to become mainstream.
Yeah, and before we prove that our minds are eternal, IADC therapists all over the world now, we're going to do, and we have begun doing some serious research on the therapeutic effects. So that's our first step is I would love it if IADC became a mainstream therapy. That's my goal.
Well, and the beauty of it is that with the work you're doing, and because you're doing it purely from a scientific approach, you're going to help to show science and show the world that human minds are eternal and must be, there's just no way this could work. I mean, I think you're part of what we think of as the great solution to the fact that this information's been stonewalled for more than 100 years, quite unnecessarily.
Yeah, so, you know, and I should add, too, one of the arguments that these experiences are real is if the IADC therapist tries to suggest what the experience is going to be, like, oh, you're going to see your deceased mother now when she's younger. If you do that, it doesn't work. Or if the client tries to do that on her own, it doesn't work. You have to just be wide open to this very naturally occurring experience. We can't control the content. We can't control what's going to happen. We just basically let it happen. And by the way, this works equally well with believers, agnostics, yes, and even an atheist. Most of my patients at the VA, when I introduced the technique to them, they said that, well, that's not going to work with me. I don't believe in that crap. So.
Yeah, but the laugh was on them. That's wonderful.
Yeah, well, and of course I responded, well, you're at least willing to give it a try. I think it might help. Well, okay, doc, if you think it's going to help, but you know, it's going to work with, and boom, then they have an ADC.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, those guys were even a little easier to induce because they didn't have preconceived notions of what the experience was going to be supposed to be like and so on. They were just wide open to this very natural experience.
Now, when I've talked about this with people, and I'm such an enthusiast of what you're doing, I mean, this is, I think, just going to be, it's going to change the world once it's commonly known, commonly done. But when I've talked about it with people, they say, it just happens in your mind? And the word just shouldn't be at the start of that sentence because, in fact, our minds are all that exist, and our minds are all part of a single mind. And it's perfectly logical that if we are able to relax enough and be open enough to it, we could have experiences in our greater mind which allow us to have those experiences together with people that we maybe thought were dead, or even perhaps even living people far away. But the experience happens in a scene, right? It's not just in a fog of mist. We sort of imagine we're hugging someone. Very often, as you say, there's a backyard with ducks. It's a real place that they go and they meet their dead loved ones.
People who have the experience generally say that there is a clarity to it that normal imagination doesn't have.
Right.
And many people have ADCs spontaneously during sleep. You know, and they may call them dreams because they happen during sleep, but they're always consistently described as very different from dreams. There's a clarity to them that dreams don't have. They tend to be remembered for a lifetime, unlike dreams.
That's right.
And there's an emotional impact, a healing impact that dreams don't have.
Yeah, we in the trade call them communication dreams, and they're very different from ordinary dreams. I've only had two in my lifetime, and they were years ago, and I remember them as if they had just happened, which is a characteristic of them. And they do feel as if you're in a real solid place. You're not in a vapory place. It's not you know, two-dimensional. It's quite three-dimensional, and you move within this space. We theorize that they happen at the levels of reality where the dead are, but not in the same area where the dead are. We're not, in other words, actually visiting Grandpa in his house in the afterlife, but we're in a sort of halfway place, which is at a higher vibratory rate, and we are therefore really meeting Grandpa in a nice place. A lot of times people describe them on a beach, or they're walking on a trail in the hills, or they're in a backyard with ducks, or they're in some beautiful place which might in fact look familiar. My horse's communication dream to me happened in the forest where he and I used to roam, and in a cart. He liked to be driven, we had our cart and we were on the trail. It was very, very familiar, and the dream unfolded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in most induced ADC experiences and spontaneous experiences as well, The environment is described as very Earth-like.
Yes.
As you described, but much more beautiful than any Earth scene.
Yes.
You know, people say, you know, there was these lush trees and bushes and flowers. And I remember a person said it was the greenest green I've ever seen.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Someone else was in a strawberry patch, of all places.
Well.
And he said the strawberries were as big as cantaloupes.
Really? How interesting. I had not heard that kind of story. Wow.
And he said the strawberries were the deepest, richest red he's ever seen. And there's no red on that like Earth.
Yeah. One of the things that they tell us, and one of the things the dead who communicate with us say, is that the colors in the afterlife level of reality are more intense and more beautiful, but also there are colors that we can't even imagine because they exist beyond the visible light spectrum, and our eyes are very limited when we're here to just what is visible light.
But that's just a tiny portion of the spectrum.
Yes. But isn't it interesting how all of this comes together? All of this, that's one of the things that keeps me eager to do research, even though I've done it for decades, because all of the evidence come from all these disparate sources, all comes together and talks about the same enormous reality, the same enormous set of truths. And that's exciting. So tell us, you've done a couple of decades worth of research with Vietnam War veterans. Have you healed a lot of them of their grief?
Yes. I was in the VA. I left the VA in 2003 and went into private practice and opened up my Center for Grief and Traumatic Loss. And I've been working with primarily civilians since then. But yeah, for a long time. Well, I discovered IADC accidentally, as I was saying before, in 1995. But since 1995, I've been basically doing nothing else but IADC therapy. I should mention that IADC doesn't work only with grief. It also works for other traumas as well. And generally, those other traumas are fear-based traumas where nobody dies, but you have fear that you or someone else is going to get hurt or die. And those fear-based traumas apply to abuse. They apply to a whole spectrum of different kinds of traumatic experiences.
Dr. Al, so you're in private practice. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, where are you located and how would they get in touch with you?
My office where I see people is in Lincolnshire, Illinois. And to get in touch with me, I ask that people call on Tuesday mornings between 10 a.m. and noon. I sit by my phone every time that week and take calls from people. It probably makes sense to visit my website first, which is www.induced-adc.com. Induced-adc.com with a hyphen in between induced and ADC. And you'll see my website. There are IADC trained therapists all over the world in many different states. So if anyone out there is interested, go to my website, see who's close to you. Some people prefer to travel to see me. I see people only over a weekend, two sessions on a Saturday and a Sunday morning. And that is generally plenty of time to work through a single trauma or grief issue.
Wow. Okay. So you these people that are all over the world all came to you for training?
Yes.
Wow. Good for you. Well, thank you for spreading the word.
Yeah, it's growing rapidly in Germany. It's about to grow rapidly in Italy and France. And there's actually an institute in my name in Germany. That's I'm still trying to assimilate or integrate that.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, I have a team of board members, five of them, and then me, and six of us all together, as I'm trying to say. But we sort of run the business of IADC worldwide.
Well, this is all very exciting. It's a way that anyone who is grieving, I think it's the most efficient way to deal with it. I've known some people who have hugged their grief. It's all they have left of their loved one, so they put it full and center, front and center. I mean, I lost my child. His memory will die if I stop being devastated by it, or I lost my spouse and I feel the same way. I've got to keep them alive by grieving. I think that's a mistaken way to look at grief. You aren't dishonoring your loved one by trying to heal. What you are doing is giving them the gift of your own love and healing, quite apart from any missing them. You'll always miss them, but for you to allow them not to worry about you all the time and not to be drawn to you repeatedly by the pain that you're feeling, that's a great gift to your loved one. And I think, you know, he or she deserves that gift.
Many people who come to see me for IADC therapy, before we get started, say something like, the pain I have is my only connection
to
my...
That's right. That's what I'm trying to say. Yes.
And I don't want to give that up.
Yes.
And because then if I give up my sadness, then I give up my only remaining connection. And my response to that is in IADC therapy, we process and greatly reduce that pain and that sadness, but we replace it with a happy connection
to the person who has died. Absolutely right.
Joyous connection.
Because they are able to lower their vibratory rate very easily to our level. They're here right with us now. They're in the same place. And if we are distraught and we're in terrible pain with our loss, we call them to us. We hold them to us in a way which is not healthy for them or for us.
Right.
So this is the greatest gift you can give to someone you have lost, is to try to process the grief in such a way that you can go back to the happy relationship you had before this very temporary separation called death began. So tell us then, is this what post-traumatic stress disorder is in veterans? Is it grief, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, it's more complicated than that. The way I see it is that there are two kinds of traumas in the whole wide world. It's really fairly simple. There are sadness traumas, and there are fear traumas. And those are two core issues that all human beings, and in fact all mammals, were wired for those feelings.
Okay.
So to say, you know, sort of the current thinking in the field of grief is a very individual matter, and we all need to find our own way to grieve, whether that's taking walks or reading poetry. And, you know, taking walks and reading poetry can be helpful and help soothe people, but that the profound pain associated with grief is not going to go away until you get to the point of addressing that underlying sadness. And what's interesting in IADC therapy, once we process that underlying sadness, all of the related emotions simply disappear. Usually we bury that sadness by layers of anger and layers of guilt. You know, whose fault is it? Is this his fault? My son died. Is it my fault? You know, I should have been, you know, did I not get him to the doctor fast? At the VA, we call those the what ifs.
Yeah.
You know, what if this happened? What if that happened? And it has a lot to do with attributions of blame. Whose fault is this? Who can I blame for what happened? But to really find peace with it, you've got to get to the sadness that lies beneath all that. And if we, in IADC therapy, we ignore the anger, we ignore the guilt, we ignore the inner irrational cognitions, and we just go straight for the sadness. And once we successfully process that, the anger and the guilt and the irrational cognitions simply vanish. They're gone. And we use those other layers to protect ourselves from our deepest pain.
How interesting that is. So you find that you're able, if you get to the core sadness and they get to have this either meeting, or you could call it an imagined meeting, and find that the person is fine and happy, that alleviating that core sadness will take away the more complex emotional issues as well? or alleviate them. Wow, that's fantastic.
Not only alleviate them, they vanish. They're
gone.
They
vanish. Wow. Okay. So someone has, a Vietnam War veteran, 30 years after the fact, still traumatized, came to you and you took him through this process. Is he all better then? What's a typical veteran then able to do that he couldn't do before?
Well, you know, in the case of Sam, not only did he reduce or eliminate his sadness and have a beautiful reconnection with Lee, his everything in his life related to that suddenly and automatically changed. Like when he was able to go home and start a relationship with his daughter, who he had avoided for many years. Now, PTSD is a complex disorder. And, of course, not all traumas are grief-based. Again, right. The other half of them, roughly, are fear-based traumas, where you think you're going to die or you're not going to make it and that kind of stuff. So they're not all fear-based. And they're not, you know, but like in a trauma, in a complex trauma with a Vietnam vet or anybody in a war situation, even, the vets that are coming home now, many traumatic experiences have both the core components of fear and sadness.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
To me, an IADC therapist, that we call that a single traumatic event, but really psychologically, there are two components that need to be addressed separately. You know, you go after the sadness or you go after the fear. And when you're done with that, then you go to the next
one. The other
one,
yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of. Now, I should also say that IADC does not cure PTSD. What it does a great job with are all of the intrusive symptoms. When people resolve a trauma with EMDR or IADC, the nightmares stop. The intrusive thoughts stop. The reliving of the memory stops.
Wow, good.
However, in PTSD, there are also some brain changes. They have to do with the memory system and the hippocampus and da-da-da-da. And those don't automatically change. And the arousal system sometimes can remain altered for a lifetime. In other words, the arousal systems are kind of off and make getting a good night's sleep very difficult. So some of those more physiological changes that occur with PTSD are not directly addressed with IADC therapy. However, if one goes through IADC therapy, people generally report being able to enjoy their lives again and feel a lot more of a sense of peace with who they are and what they're doing.
Yes, yes. Dr. Al, close your ears just for a moment. I'll just say parenthetically to people that another kind of therapy that is sometimes successful with post-traumatic stress disorder has been, believe it or not, spirit dispossession, that people in battle actually picked up the confused spirits of people who had just been killed. I don't know how much of that's going around. I don't like to think about it, but there is some evidence that may be part of the process, and that may be one reason that only part of it is only some of the symptoms are cured by what Dr. Al does, and it may then be that another therapist who does spirit dispossession may be able to get rid of the rest of it. Who knows? Until we have real scientists who are doing research, working in this field in a thorough way, I find it hard to imagine we'll be able to do more than work around the edges of it. And well, the wonderful thing you're doing, Dr. Al, is you're really helping people today. You're not waiting for universities to sort of stumble toward the truth, but you're doing it now. That is fantastic.
Well, we are trying to get universities involved. The University of Virginia is currently involved in a study of what's going on inside the brain during IADC therapy.
Really? That's great. Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful school.
And we do have some outcome studies that have been published in journals that show that IADC works very well. What we really need is a control group design study. That's the gold standard in the field, but we have people in the planning stage for that kind of work too.
Well, that's exciting and very encouraging. The University of Virginia has been on the leading edge in other areas too. Ian Stevenson and his wonderful work in what amounts to a kind of immediate reincarnation. Very, very interesting set of studies he did and he devoted his life to, and they're still going on at the University of Virginia. So they're a little more open-minded there than many, many scientists are, which is exciting.
Yeah, that's where Dr. Bruce Grayson is.
Yes.
Who's one of the very top NDE researchers in the world.
Yes. So
what a smart guy he is.
Yes.
Really amazing.
And part of the joy, don't you find, in working in this field is you meet such wonderful, brilliant, kind, and gentle people. It's just
absolutely
the best.
They're not all like that. But
well, I'm finding that that's part of the joy of this. I've made such wonderful friends, including you, sir. I'm enjoying very much our conversation. I hate to say it's sort of coming to an end. Please tell people again how they can reach you.
Well, start by going to my website, induced-adc.com. You'll see my phone number on there, my call times. You'll see trained therapists who may live close to you. And I give a description of how the weekend goes. And if there are people who want to get trained, at this point, I am only training people who have completed the first weekend of EMDR training. The most important thing I do is train people, because for every person I train, then more people get this therapy. So I do both the treatment and the training, and all of that is available. All that information is available on my website. And if you want to get a better idea and kind of a more complete story of what we're talking about today, buy my book. You can get it on Amazon.
I just want to say, I have a copy of the 2005 book in my hand, and I have dog-eared about every other page. When I'm reading and I find something wonderful that I want to go back to later, that's what I do, so I don't have to interrupt my reading. So this was a great book, and it's been reissued in 2014 as Induced After-Death Communication, A Miraculous Therapy for Grief and Loss. And it is by Dr. Alan Botkin, so you can find it on Amazon. I strongly recommend it, not just because of it's an easy, enjoyable, and fun read, not just because of that, and not just because of the fact that what it talks about is such a great groundbreaking therapy, but even almost as important to me is it's so consistent with all the other afterlife evidence that it really helps to reinforce what the ultimate cure for grief, which is knowing that our minds are eternal. And I love that about this book. So unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time together again. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. When you fully grasp what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality, of course, are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which is about just what we're talking about today, after-death communications, all the many ways the dead try to get in touch with us, and we can get in touch with them. You'll find details about my books, plus my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest next week, all the way from Sydney, Australia, is the extraordinary researcher and scholar Wendy Zammit. Her husband, Victor, is a pioneer in the field of afterlife research, and Wendy has been there with him all along, and she and I have become very good friends. We're going to be talking together. We were having a conversation. We Skype every week, and we finally said, you know, we should probably do an interview about this, because we were talking about what is really the most surprising thing about our nearly 200 years of afterlife evidence, and things like Dr. Botkin's research and efforts to help people, all of these things. From every disparate source, every bit of evidence fits with every other bit of evidence. It all fits together. There is no more certain proof that this is a genuine science than the fact that it all fits. And you're going to love Wendy's wonderful insights. We've already recorded this. You're going to enjoy it so much. She's a joyous and beautiful human being, and the things she has to tell you will rock your world. So please join us next week. Now, this week, once again, Dr. Alan Botkin has been telling us about his method for inducing after-death communications as a way to dramatically reduce the pains and stress of grief. This is all happy stuff. To be able to see again someone that you thought you had lost and have that person talk about how happy he or she is now is the best gift you can give yourself if you're grieving, because the dead are as near to us as the air we breathe. They just don't have physical bodies. When we really know the truth that our minds are eternal, not only can we alleviate terrible grief, but every possible fear also melts away in the sunlight of the truth of our eternal natures. Don't you think it's time, given how wonderful the reality that we live in actually is, isn't it time we work together to begin to make the truth known to the world? I think it is, but for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you're infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.